I'm bringing Hansel back. The mother boys
don't know how to act. Yeah. Get your sexy on. You know what that music means? It's time for us to talk with Tim Hasselbeck. We are at one of his favorite places, certainly one of ours. We are here at Kitchen Notes.
I bet he wish he was here.
In the beautiful downtown. Oh, yeah. They are feeding us like kings. Mm-hmm. We had SEC commissioner in here with us last hour. Bryce Drew, Vanderbilt basketball coach, in here at the table with us last hour. They've been feeding us. The food is spectacular. You could have been here. You could have been a part of this.
Could have had fried green tomatoes. They were good.
Derek just scarfed down fried green tomatoes during the break.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. I guess my invitation must have got lost in the mail.
Sent them out last week.
Yes, because that's what people do today, send invitations through the mail.
I think we sent it to your other email address.
Facebook invite.
Yeah. Check your junk mail. Do you ever check your junk mail?
It may have gone to spam.
You know, it depends who sent it. Like if Chase sent it, it's one of my like Starred is one of my favorites. Uh-huh. You know, so it comes in that way. But if it came from anybody else, yeah, it went into like a blocked list. Yeah.
So you mean anybody else? So like Chase is the only one that you would get, and anybody else would be considered spam or trash?
Well, yeah, because here's what's happened. Yep, I mean, we know that, Darren, that's exactly what you would be, okay? So we know that that's the case. D-Mason and I were cool until he said that he played in your fantasy league, so now D-Mason's out. And Willie's the only one that, you know, Willie is kind of infringed on Chase's territory in terms of friendship with me, because we see each other outside of, you know, just being on the radio together. So, you know.
No, he's Switzerland. That's why you guys get along. He's freaking Switzerland. He wants to be everybody's friend. And that's,
you know,
if that's what you want, is Switzerland as friends, then fine.
He'll never stand behind. He'll never be there with you in thick and thin.
When you're in the trenches and you need somebody, yeah, okay, go ahead. Pick Switzerland.
Okay. Yeah. I remember. I mean, if you guys.
He's going to switch sides.
If you think you two have been standing by me, I mean, we already gave an example of teammates not standing behind me. Okay?
Hey, we didn't say we were standing by you
at
all times.
If that opportunity would present itself where you needed somebody to stand by you, we're your guys. But no, you pick Switzerland. That's fine.
Okay. All right.
Pick neutral. Do you ever drive in neutral? No, nobody ever drives in neutral. So why would you pick neutral?
Nobody ever puts it in neutral. Where I stand. Listen, I'm also, you know, cognizant of the type of people I'm surrounding myself with, you know? I want to surround myself with a guy that goes off on the second grader who doesn't run through first base, okay? You know? I'm not careful.
This has gotten off to a terrible start. We must recover.
I think it's fantastic.
Chase just turned this into a promo.
Oh, my goodness.
I guess today the announcement came out that the draft will be at Jerry's World in Dallas. This is going to be you know, Tim, since you've been coming on, I've been saying, look, once they left the Big Apple and weren't coming back, they weren't going to come back for a good while, and they shouldn't. I mean, this is what they should be doing. It's common sense. Move it around to different NFL markets. Let everybody experience it. And let everybody benefit from having the NFL in their city for a week.
Completely agree. And I don't know that it means that every city should get it, but I will say this. Having lived in New York City when the draft was in New York City, no one really knew what was going on. I mean, it was just another event in New York City. I mean, Fashion Week could have been going on at the same time and been getting more, you know, publicity, you know, than the NFL draft being there. So when they moved it originally to Chicago, and I was in Chicago for the first year that it was there, you know, for the draft, and there was a buzz. I mean, they shut down Michigan Avenue, portions of it anyway, because it was like, hey, the NFL draft is here. And people in Chicago were excited about it. And then last year in Philadelphia, I can tell you that it felt like there was a game going on. I mean, when you would – you know, the way the city kind of embraced it and set up for people to attend and have various events, you know, whether it was people traveling from other cities to experience it in Philadelphia or just people, you know, from that area experiencing it, it was a big event that drew interest. And I would anticipate Dallas doing the same thing. And I think there are other cities where you'll get that same type of excitement. To be honest, I think Nashville would be a city that would generate that type of excitement. I don't think that you know, Boston or New England would. The LA markets won't. Seattle probably won't. And so I think you have to be careful of where you put it. And so that's why I don't think everyone gets to enjoy it. But I do think that they've done – listen, we beat the NFL up a lot. This was a good move on their part.
Was this meeting a good thing this week? Players, owners, commissioner getting together, talking about what's been going on this season. Was this a good thing, or was this lip service? Was this window dressing?
You know, I will say, just from my perspective, it seems like it's been a good thing from the standpoint of it doesn't, to me anyway, feel like, and obviously I wasn't in there to hear it, but it doesn't feel like it was two sides that went in there saying, listen, this is where I've dug my heels into the ground, and I'm not moving from here. It's not what it seemed like, and I guess just based on history, that's what I was expecting. I was expecting the owners to say, here's the deal, fellas, you're going to stand, and here's why, and you can't do anything about it. And I was expecting players to say, well, no, we're not standing for it, and you know, this is going to end up in court like everything else has ended up in court. So I think from the standpoint of it not being something that at least appeared to be combative, that's a good thing for both sides, in my opinion.
Colin Kaepernick has filed a grievance. I said this week that I believe when you go down that road, everybody has the right to do that. And in fact, if you listen to the stories, in fact, the first time I heard it was Mike Florio on Sunday Night Football saying that really the last straw was the Titans showing no interest whatsoever, not even – basically willing to even pick up the phone and have a discussion, that may have been the final straw. But when you go down this road, you've basically ended any chance of probably making a comeback or getting to play again. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I also would say that, you know, we have now created an environment where anytime there's a quarterback that doesn't play well or a situation where somebody's going to get signed, you know, it's automatically like Colin Kaepernick is getting the short end of the stick because he's not being considered for it. The thing I would say is this. Marcus is back healthy again, right? Matt Cassel's been in the program for a few years right now and has been a starter for longer than Colin's been a starter. It's beyond reasonable to think that Mike Mularkey and his staff thought, look, here's the deal. We need somebody to run scout team. That's all we need. We need somebody to be a scout team quarterback and not fumble a snap if they have to come into a game. And we want it to be, as least disruptive as possible. And so the people that would come into consideration for that, there'd be a segment of players that would fit that situation, just like there would be, you know, all of these places. And so if that's the final straw, if that was the tipping point for Kaepernick, I think it just goes to show you how misguided that thinking is, because that's not how it works. It's everything when you sign somebody. You're taking everything into consideration, you know, how he'll assimilate to the locker room as well as the quarterback room, how he'll, come to work at practice, what type of, attention, will he draw in the locker room for whatever it is that he brings to the table. So I think that's what everyone's thinking about.
When you hear Kaepernick's attorney say that they'll be able to prove this, he has a high degree of confidence that they'll be able to prove collusion. And then you also hear that they believe they have a smoking gun. What do you think they're talking about?
I guess, not being an expert on what proves collusion, but if listen, if collusion is two scouts texting each other and saying, or two, you know, director of pro personnel texting each other because they have a good relationship and they've worked with each other in the past saying, I still think he can play, but we wouldn't want that headache in our locker room. And then another guy saying, yeah, we wouldn't either. Like, to me, that's not collusion. That's having a reason for not wanting to sign somebody for being disruptive to your team. I've said this over and over again, and I really believe it to be true. And I've said it to you guys, I became the Giants' backup quarterback in large part because the Giants did not want the distraction of Jesse Palmer, the bachelor, being Eli Manning's backup. And they weren't the only team that felt that way. Jesse really never had a career after the Bachelor.
I was going to say, wasn't that it for him?
It kind of was it. I think he maybe bounced around, was in a camp, or you know, maybe had a year. Like, so that was it. And it wasn't because people were like, hey, all these single dudes that want to play quarterback, they're out, and let's make sure we keep them out of the league. I mean, that's not what it was. So I mean this. Even the biggest Kaepernick, you know, kind of champions that are out there would say, is he really going to make a big difference on any one of these teams? Is he going to make a big difference? Are they going to the playoffs because of him? Are they, like, is he making that big of a difference? And if the answer is no, which I think is an answer that you would get from a lot of people. They won one game last year. I get not a very good team. That team hasn't won any games this year. They won one game last year in San Francisco. And so this idea that he makes you better, like so much better, I just don't believe it's accurate.
Monday Night Football was here, as you know. By the way, why was your brother here and not you? This is your town, just like our town.
He probably was.
You're a part of the city with us.
Yeah.
How come Chase went over and said hi to all my family members that were there, and you guys didn't. You know what I mean? Like, how come he did that?
I wasn't here.
Well, because D-Mace was out. He was on his private charter heading to Cleveland for Cavs Celtics last night, and. The Smyrna Braves had a big practice. They got a, you know, big stretch run. We're undefeated. We're in first place.
They got to learn how to run through first base. I got you.
Yeah. No, we did work on that. Thank you for bringing that up. Yes. We had a big practice that we had to get in. So
yeah. So he was here in his jeans and his cowboy boots. I thought he was trying to play to his audience a little too much.
Which screams out of towner is what that
does.
Yeah,
I mean, screams. It was like, come on, dude. You know, you lived here for 2 years. You know the drill.
Jacoby Brissett, I believe he's a starter in this league. What do you think?
I think that he definitely has potential to be the starter. And look, this is kind of a good example, right? Hey, remember when the Colts needed to sign Kaepernick? You know, I mean, the truth is, like, young guys getting an opportunity to play, sometimes they prove that they can play. And I know that everybody in Indy has been thrilled with how he's done. And if you think about what he's done, you know, really learning on the fly, it's been very impressive. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens to him. You know, the Colts trade, you know, somebody they drafted in the first round in order to get him. And so, you know, they probably, especially with Andrew's situation, are going to want to keep him around. But I think that he could easily find himself in a situation where, you know, he's going to get opportunities to compete for a job in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I was impressed. I realize they have been having a lot of fourth quarter collapses, but I'm not sure.
A lot of
it's
it has
not
to
on
him.
Jacoby Brissett. I mean, I think he's proven he can make the throws and. What little time he's had to be a starter in this league, I mean, I think he would only get better. He's making mistakes, sure.
Everyone there is really, really impressed.
He seems like a leader too, right? He's a leader.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. And people there are impressed with his approach, you know, just coming in, learning, continuing to work hard. He's turned a lot of heads there. I mean, I know that to be a fact.
Well, When we come back, D-Mace will certainly throw a lot more your way, Titans-related, AFC South, a lot more. But here's the big difference to what you just – you know, you tried to throw yet again another slam my way. I know Chase sent me a text, and he's like, I just met – he called him Matthew. Matthew, and he's just as nice. He just is – no, listen.
When you're in the circle right. of trust, you call him Matthew.
Mm-hmm. Here's the deal, Tim. He sent me a text saying, hey, I just met Matthew, and he's just as nice as Tim. Well, here's the deal, Tim. I covered your brother. I've been around your brother. I've kind of been doing this a long time. I know your brother pretty well. So I already know that stuff. Because, see, when I was doing that, he was doing, you know, nickel beer night on his college campus.
Wow.
Trying to get a degree. See, I was actually covering and around him on a daily basis. So, I mean, I already know that stuff. I didn't need to go to Monday Night Football to know that Matthew is a really swell guy.
You know,
like Tim.
You know what's funny, though? This reminds me of that Between the Two Rexes commercial with Rex Ryan and Matthew, where Rex says, I asked Brett and he doesn't remember you. Like, I asked Matthew and he doesn't remember you.
That's not true. That is not true. This is once again another slam by you directed.
Oh my goodness.
By the way, I would say right now if we're scoring at home, you're winning this round. Tim Hasselbeck every week brought to you by Penn Station East Coast Subs. Why do we sign up for this? Why do I sign up for this abuse? I thought we had the upper hand, D-Mace.
I have no idea.
Tim, the momentum is going Tim's way. He's starting to win these battles now. East Coast Subs located in Hermitage, Mount Juliet, Bellevue, and two locations in Murfreesboro. More with Timmy next on 3D.
Back at you, 3D. Only two of the D's are here today. Well, now, Willie is off to Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. Flyers, Preds tomorrow. Here, Kitchen Notes here at the Omni Hotel. Darren and Derek with Tim Hasselbeck. As he is every, what is it, Wednesday now?
Yes.
Yes, Wednesday. Absolutely. I got my days are mixed up because I missed so many days of work. ESPN's NFL analyst. Tim, what does life after Aaron Rodgers look like this year? We saw what it looked like a few years ago when he missed a significant amount of time. That team mm-hmm. was totally different. But watching Huntley play, it seems as if the kid has some ability to, not necessarily, obviously, he's not going to beat Aaron Rodgers, nothing close to it, but he's going to be able to lead this team to some victories. Are they still the favorite in the NFC?
I don't think they're the favorite anymore, but I would agree with your assessment that he has, Huntley, that is, has, you know, ability. In fact, I think he has a lot of it. And, you know, what does the team look like? Look, they're going to look so different because you're basically taking, you know, arguably the best quarterback in the game that does a lot of improvising, does a lot of, you know, just things on his own that aren't necessarily called from the sideline. And you're now removing that. And so you're going to see an offense now that, you know, just going to operate differently. The plays they run and how they're executed are going to happen in a much different way than they are when Aaron's in there. But that doesn't mean they can't go, you know, 5-5 over their next 10 games. You know, it doesn't, it doesn't mean that. And so, you know, I think that's part of this where, you know, I look at it and say, look, the New England Patriots were in a situation to be without Tom Brady, and they had a second-round draft pick who came in and played well enough that everybody views him as a starter, maybe the eventual replacement of Tom Brady. You know, Brett Hundley, who, you know, I studied when he came out of UCLA and was very impressed with him, he ends up being a third-round draft pick. He's been, you know, coached by good coaches in Green Bay, and now he has an opportunity to basically do the same thing, prove to people that he can be a starter. And I think there's a chance that he's able to do that. You know, to me, having watched these guys, I don't think Jacoby Brissett has more ability or is necessarily a better player than Brett Hundley. Mm-hmm. So if I'm Mike McCarthy and Ted Thompson and the leadership at the Packers, as devastated you are about Aaron and his injury, you maybe are unearthing the next Mark Brunell, Aaron Brooks, Matt Hasselbeck, whoever it may be, because they've done this before. I mean, it was Matt Flynn who played, and they've played their backups before. And listen, sometimes it was Seneca Wallace and it didn't go great, but other times it was Matt Flynn and it went really well for him. So I think that's what's going to happen in Green Bay. You're going to learn and figure out if Brett Hundley's a starter, and I think there's a really good chance that he is.
Now, before I get to the Titan questions, is Ezekiel Elliott and his team just they're just prolonging the inevitable that he will be suspended because now they've gotten another reprieve, so he's going to be able to play this next upcoming game. When do you think this thing gets to a point where Elliott and his team figures, you know what, let's serve the 6 games right now, and at least we will be back if Dallas is in a position to make the playoffs?
Well, I will just say this, and I'm guessing I speak for a lot of people, or I'm expressing the same thing that a lot of people feel, is that I'm exhausted by it. I mean, there's times where mm-hmm. I have to remind myself, like, what they are even fighting over, you know, and then I realize, okay, it's a process that they're fighting over, not whether or not, you know, this, you know, a situation with domestic violence occurred and all this stuff. And so I, like a lot of people, am kind of just gassed by it. I got on a plane yesterday, and before I took off, he was suspended. By the time I landed, he's good to go to play for the next 2 weeks. Like, I just, you know, to me, I think what happens, and I feel like this is just the process that it's going to take every time we're dealing with player suspensions, is that it's going to get tried at every level, you know, that they can appeal it on. And ultimately, he probably plays this year out. Again, this is a guess, but, you know, he plays the entire year out. And then there's some type of hard and fast decision on it once the season's over and it doesn't matter. And he probably ends up serving the suspension at some point, but it's probably not this season. I mean, that's how I would see it, and it's kind of the blueprint based on, you know, what's happened to other guys in the past.
Now, do you see this injury to Marcus Mariota, the hamstring injury, do you see it as it can potentially be a blessing for him? Because I look at Marcus and there were some throws prior to the injury that he had a hard time making. He never seemed comfortable with making. Now, in between the hashes, Marcus is great. I think he's one of the best in the league, but it's outside the hashes, deep outs, deep balls. He has a trouble with his accuracy or completion rate. Some of it has to do with, you know, guys dropping it, but then sometimes more than not, he's off key. But because of the injuries, he's forced to stay in a pocket and he's forced to use his mechanics more than he probably would had he not been injured.
I think that there's an awesome chance, and I don't know if it shows itself this year, but that he is way better off for it. I mean, it was clear. Just look at the game plan Monday night. There was not a single design quarterback run in the plan. There was not a single zone read in the plan. And, you know, he escaped outside the pocket one time for a throwaway and was quick to throw it away. Another time, he got down quickly. I think the hardest he ran the entire night was after the pick that got run back for a score. I think that was the most he had opened up, you know, running the entire night. And I think everybody would have been okay if he didn't even chase the play at all. So, and then watching the game, it seemed like he played his best from the pocket in the fourth quarter. I mean, think about that scoring drive where it was, you know, a couple of completions to Decker. One looked like an option route. Another one was a deep over. I mean, I think you have to take a huge amount from that. I really do, because let's just look around the league of guys that have played for a long time that are successful. They're able to play and be available each and every week, and that's what we were talking about last week. but he available each and every week because they kind of play like he played on Monday night. I watch Eli Manning give himself up all the time so he doesn't take a big hit. You know, or Tom Brady do the same thing, or Drew Brees do the same thing. And these guys are constantly doing that, and they're always available to play.
Yeah, you're right. And I think this Marcus, one, I think the Titans just had to bring him back. Even if he's 60 or 70%, it's better than the alternative. And the alternative is Matt Castle. And they knew it. That's why they, at first, it went from being a 2 to 6, you know, 2 to 4 week thing to once they saw Matt play in that Miami game, they said, we got to get Marcus back in. But I think that, you know, him playing with that injury, he gains that much more respect from his team. Because I think that was the thing. Guys didn't know whether, you know, Marcus would play with an injury or not. But Monday he proved that, you know what, I can play with an injury and be effective.
There's no doubt that there seemed to be this pressure of, hey, we want him to play. You're always concerned about a reoccurrence of the injury. But, you know, hearing guys talk after the game, everybody knew that he wasn't right. I think they understood that the plan was just because they weren't doing a lot of the same design run stuff that they typically do. And so I believe he gained a lot of respect from his teammates just through that process. And so that's obviously a good thing. And then the production is a good thing. And so they should be thrilled about it. And then the other aspect of it is that they have another, you know, assuming that he came out of it healthier than he went into it, they've got a winnable game this week, and then there's time to heal. So, you know, I think that, and sometimes you got to be careful, you know, it's a Monday night game, a lot of eyes on it, not to overreact on this thing, but I feel like that in some ways can be a, you know, almost not necessarily a career-defining moment, but it's like the trajectory of your career-changing moment from the standpoint of, wow, you know what? I can play from just in the pocket, and I don't always have to get out and escape. And, you know, the other guys play the game this way, and if I can be – I'm good as a runner. If I can be better in the pocket, this is going to be better for everybody. And so – or if I'm hurt in the future, just what you were asking about last week, Derek, if I'm hurt in the future, can I play the next week with, you know, kind of one hand up behind my back, and is that still better in what the team needs? Because it was on Monday night.
Absolutely. Now, Tim, we'll talk with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN's NFL analyst. I've gotten a chance now, after this Monday night, watching every team in the conference play. Houston, Indy, Jacksonville, and obviously the Titans. And what I've come up with is it's Houston's division to lose. Because I think the Titans still won. I think eventually Marcus has to be fully healthy in order for those, in order for them to beat Houston, to beat Jacksonville, to beat some of these other teams, harder teams they got to play toward the end. Now, they can beat Indy. I think they can beat a Cleveland with a 70% Marcus, but I think he needs to be at least 90 to 100% in order to make a real push at winning the division. But what from what I've seen, even with Watt and Merciless gone, I think the way Deshaun Watson has been playing, the confidence they have now, it's Houston's division to lose. How do you see it?
Yeah, I think a lot of people feel that way. The thing I would be a little bit concerned about if, you know, I was, you know, a Houston Texans fan would be that, you know, Watson's probably got to come back down to earth somewhere because – you know, the explosive plays that they're getting with him, you know, usually, you know, do come back down to earth. I mean, that's just the reality of the situation. I think they're doing some things with him that's just not in the history of what people have seen from Bill O'Brien's offenses in the past. And so, you know, when you're preparing for the Houston Texans, and if you think about preparing for anybody that is coached against Bill O'Brien, you know, you've prepared against, you know, Tom Brady, you've prepared against Brian Hoyer, Brandon Weeden, Brock Osweiler. And so the history of those offenses have been designed for those guys. You know, this past week, you get you're an empty. The Houston's an empty, and they have a quarterback, you know, like one back power called down on the goal line. And so I think eventually you're going to have people defending Houston differently, having more success doing it, and then you know, Watson coming back down to earth. It's going to be a good chance for. I think they're at Seattle. It's not this week, next week, or they play Seattle coming soon. I'm going to be interested to see them versus a really, really good defense and what that does, you know, to a quarterback that's been on fire. So, and their defensive issues are real. I mean, the injuries that they've had to key people are real, and they have other guys that are banged up also. So I get that, but I still think the division is wide open. I don't know that they're necessarily the clear lead favorite for it.
They are at Seattle this week, and then they host Indianapolis, and they're at the Rams. That's their next three games. Two road games, Seattle, L.A., not easy, and Indianapolis.
Yeah, and they could easily drop two of the next three, and I looked at the Titans schedule, and I'm not remembering an entire thing off the top of my head, but I think they can win. Like, you're just looking at five out of their next seven are games that you think you're going to be disappointed if you don't win them. And that would put you in a pretty good spot.
This Cleveland thing, to know that they traded away their pick.
Yeah.
They could have taken Carson Wentz.
The last 2 years.
They traded away their pick, and they could have taken Deshaun Watson, and they're trotting out there Deshaun Kaiser and Hulk
Hogan.
And
playing last week. And
yeah.
You know what?
I mean,
at some point, and it's what I said at the – by the way, like you also could have taken Trubisky. You know, you could have. So, to me, I just look at these situations for them and think, listen, at some point, like, you got to go. Like, you know, it's, you know, if you ever, whatever, jumped off a bridge into a river or whatever, like, you climb all the way up there. Like, at some point, like, hey, you got to go. Like, you got to. You got to do it.
You mean like you kick them out of the league and send them to Canada? What do you mean they got to go?
Yeah. I'm saying, like, you got to pick. Like, sometimes when you're way up there, like, there's not going to be a perfect, you know, a perfect prospect. You know, you're not going to get everybody to sign off on Andrew Luck. You know, it's not going to be normal that happens. And so when you're picking early, whether it's Carson Wentz or whether it's Mitchell Trubisky or whether it was, Ben Roethlisberger back in the day, like, at some point, like, you just have to realize we're picking here for a reason, and this guy's showing a lot of the traits, but we're not sure. Look at the Titans, for example. You're picking high. Were there concerns about Marcus and the offense that he came from and all that? Yeah, there were concerns, but, like, at some point, you got to be like, you know what? He's good enough, and then we coach him and surround him with enough talent that, like, we can win with him. And they were right. You could. So I just – same thing with the guy in Tampa, Jameis Winston. Like, at some point, you just got to go, yeah, we got to take him, you know, because he does have a lot of the traits that you are looking for. Not all of them, but some of them.
When you're in Bristol and you're talking about the Titans, do you ever, like, reference, like, yeah, I was on this really good radio show and we were talking about this, and then kind of go into your answer? Do you ever do that?
Let me try to think if I ever say that.
You ever
reference? If you got to think about it.
Yeah, there's your answer, yeah.
No, you know what I did do? Remember? No, remember what I did do?
No, I don't remember. That's what I'm asking you. Yeah.
No, Chase will remember.
A couple weeks ago, Rishard Matthews, we had the interview with him talking about was he going to kneel or stay in the locker room or what he was going to do.
Uh-huh.
And he gave us an answer that, I think, as a network, we thought was like, wow, that was news. He is doing that. And then Chase said, yeah, that's what he told me after the game in the locker room. And so I sent an email, and I said, well, did we credit 102.5 the game for that sound? And no one responded
really?
To me. But yeah.
He got lost in
You're
the
You're saying
jump,
A for effort. A for effort. Okay.
Now listen. Like, if you would have had Darren, if it was like your interview with him, I'd be like, whatever. You know what I mean? We don't need to credit him. But since Chase did it, since Chase did it, I was like, wait a minute. You know what? Like, Chase needs to get credit for this. He deserves it.
Now, wait a minute. Did he told Chase, or this was scrum? Was this a scrum setting, or was this a one-on-one?
I'm pretty sure it was an exclusive. I
don't know. Let's hear from Mr. Exclusive. You know what? Was this in a scrum setting or one-on-one?
You know, I can't recall.
Yeah, I think we know the answer. Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know what it was? Did you guys see Peter King riding to work with Trevor?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was that.
By the way, that interview was so enlightening. I learned absolutely nothing. Yeah. But anyway, but I digress.
That's how I envisioned Chase getting the info from Rashad Matthews.
So he was riding along with Chase.
Yeah.
Tim, I know that Tim brings me up all the time.
We've got eight cameras in here. Hey.
Like Trey Wingo knows who I am. That's why Trey comes on with us. So because of Tim.
I got to be honest. I don't like to rip. But, you know, Peter Keene is certainly I've praised that he does good work. But that interview was a hot pile of garbage. That was absolutely a waste of everyone's time, including Trevor Siemian and Peter Keene.
It might have been. It wasn't. It probably wasn't his finest work.
Was that snow
however,
I saw
however,
on the field?
If he was in the car with him, it would be good.
If he popped up maybe in the back seat,
hey,
you see
guys.
Like his head.
What up?
My goodness. Anybody else see the snow on the field?
See, that's how bad the interview was. You're looking at what's around them rather than paying attention
like,
to what's really
October
going on.
It's October and it's snow on the ground already, but they're in the mountains.
Yeah,
so
the mountains.
There you go.
It was. That was not. I can't imagine in his Hall of Fame career that was his best work, Peter Keene.
It might have been.
I walked away going.
Simeon doesn't seem like a real exciting guy though either.
No, he doesn't. You're right.
When are you going to do a ride along, Tim?
You know what? That'd be good, right? You know what? These things must be popular right now because I saw Sal Palantonio riding along with Doug Peterson to work the other day.
Okay. Do you want to do a ride along with us?
You can
with
do a
3D?
Ride along with us.
A ride along with 3D.
We'll put you in that 102.5 van.
We'll do, you know what? As long as it's going to Kitchen Notes and not the studio. Yeah.
Oh wow!
Hey, remember I got the car with the heated seats. So.
Oh wow.
Tim, always a pleasure. Have a great rest of your week.
All right, see you guys.
Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. He's something. He is something. We'll come back and wrap up hour number 3 of 3D next. Good stuff from Tim Hasselbeck, as always. Mm-hmm. Had a good second hour with SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey and Vanderbilt basketball coach Bryce Drew. We are here at Kitchen Notes, downtown Omni Hotel. This is the site of the men's basketball media days. That's today. Tomorrow will be the women's side. And so those were two good things. Hope you enjoyed that in the second hour. You wanted to get into some of the things that were brought up, D-Mace, because we didn't obviously get a chance to get your reaction to Monday night. Now, some of this stuff, you could kind of tell what you were thinking. In fact, Tim brought up a lot of points that I made on Tuesday that I think in the end, when you think about it, future and long-term for Mariota, because look, the approach is going to be the same for Cleveland. He's going to be a statue. He's going to have to stay right where he was at a couple, you know, what, three-step drop?
Yeah.
And that's what he's going to be. I mean, he's not going to be able to move Sunday against the Browns. Now, maybe after the bye week, maybe that gets better, but this is what he's going to be. But I said, I think for the long haul, this is actually good for him because this is forcing him to bring another element or to improve another element to his game.
I think it does. I think it for one, I think it forces the coaches to do more within the pocket, to run more conventional run plays and not put Marcus in a situation where he's going to take a hit. And then it gives Marcus, because at the beginning of the game, and I said it, the first three quarters, at least the first, let's say first two before half, Indy was the better team. Indy did some things offensively that the Tennessee Titans couldn't stop. Marcus looked a little, one, he looked rusty. And then, two, he looked a little bit uncomfortable with strictly not being able to run. Like, there was, it just seemed like there was something in him that wanted to run, but he knew he couldn't. So he had forced himself to stay in the pocket, and some of his passes were off. Obviously, there's an interception, but, I mean, it's tip pass. Well, it really wasn't. Was it tip? Yeah, it was tip, and then Carter just straight up caught. But then there were some drops, too. But I think the second half, in particular the fourth quarter, I think you end up going, you know, 10 for 12. And his quarterback rating was high, was at his highest in the fourth quarter, because I believe he settled down. He became more confident and comfortable inside the pocket. I think he became comfortable with playing with his injury. And I believe that would only bode well moving down, moving forward for the Tennessee Titans, because now they can look at it and say, listen, we don't have to put Marcus in a situation where he will be exposed. He's proven that he can throw from the pocket. The offensive line is going to protect him, and we can base our offense off of that and not have Marcus incorporated into our run game as much as we have in the past. So it saves him from getting those extra shots down the field. So, and then it helps, like I said, it helps Marcus build up his confidence. Like, okay, I can do this. Granted, they were playing against Indy's, you know, secondary that is atrocious, but he still dismantled them in the fourth quarter. So I think ultimately, Tim said it, I believe it, that this will make him a better quarterback moving forward. But the Titans, they have problems. And I think when you win, because the game was closer than what the score indicated, that huge run at the end kind of opened everything up. Great run by, really good run by Derrick Henry. He showed the speed, the power, the ability to get outside. But there's still some problems on the defensive end of the ball. They paid a lot of money for that back end, and that back end is not playing up to standards, I don't think. I think Logan Ryan can be a much better player. Adoree Jackson is still learning. Those are some of the learning curves that he's, you know, the pass interference in the end zone. Those are things he's going to learn. But from a – then the run defense got gashed early on, and it wasn't until they started bringing, you know, the blitzes and you know, twisting a bunch of guys that they stop the run game. They can't, it don't seem as if they can do it just playing, you know, a 5-6 man front. They can't.
They have got to get better at getting to the quarterback.
Yeah. It's dismal.
I mean, Indianapolis has been they're a prime suspect to be able to get to the quarterback. They weren't able to do it. Cleveland, you should be able to get to Cleveland's quarterback, and we'll see if they can do that. But they, I mean, sacks is just not there. I don't know why. They were good with being an opportunistic. They got the key turnover with
Doyle.
Yeah, Doyle did not have a very good game, which minus the touchdown, and he's had really good games against the Titans. I did not think he had a very good game, a good night at all, but they've got to get more pressure to the quarterback. They just have to. They have to start winning these battles in the trenches.
And that's something that they hadn't done. And
I mean, they're all around them, but you got to get to them.
You got to get them. You got to knock them down. You know, if you look at what their two defensive ends have been able to do, and it's nothing near what they were doing last year at this point, you know, Arakpo and Derek Morgan. So I think the both of them together as a team, they got 8 sacks.
I think Jarrell Casey's been kind of quiet this year.
Yeah, Derek Morgan has 3, and Arakpo has 1, if that, because you're talking after 6 games, only 8 sacks.
I was like, who leads them?
Yeah.
Casey? Morgan and
Morgan
3?
Morgan with 3. So they're not getting to the quarterback like they hoped they would.
Through 6 games and your leader in the sack department is 3.
That's not good.
That's not good. We'll come back with the final hour of 3D from Kitchen Notes in the Downtown Omni. We'll do that next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.